Gorillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast, teaching Davids how to defeat Goliaths. Now here's your host, Mark Anthony Peterson.
Welcome back to the podcast for entrepreneurs, startups, and business mavericks. In this podcast, we teach entrepreneurs how to defeat corporate giants. Just like in the story of David and Goliath, David defeated a much taller and stronger Goliath not by fighting the giant in hand-to-hand combat, but by using technology. A slingshot. The slingshot allowed the smaller David to attack from a distance that minimized the advantages that Goliath had over the smaller David. My name is Mark Anthony Peterson. I am a serial entrepreneur and managing executive at Serial Consulting, a leading small business strategy and technology consulting firm. I am also the author of the book, Gorillapreneur. Gorillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. This podcast is brought to you by Serial Consulting. An idea can launch a business. A strategy can take it global. During our last podcast, Episode 5, we introduced you to Megan Waddell, the co-founder of the Chattanooga, Tennessee-based Too Good Coco. In my mastermind interviews, I seek out business mavericks who integrate gorillapreneur principles into the core of their business. Now remember, I define gorillapreneurs as business mavericks who exploit excess capacity or inefficiencies in existing systems for the benefit of their business with the intent of generating incremental profits that they will invest in slingshot technology. Slingshot technology lets your business, your small business, price or serve at the same level as the corporate giant. Now, we learned a lot from Megan. First, we learned that she chose to launch her business as an online store instead of going out and launching a storefront, a brick and mortar storefront. Now, don't let this simple phrase go past you without really focusing in on it. I'm sure Walmart never expected Amazon as an online vendor to be kicking its smiley face all around the country when they first launched, but they're doing that right now. Megan also encouraged small businesses to take full advantage of free social media marketing to help you build your brand. Now, she built up 50,000 Twitter followers before she even launched Too Good Coco. Now she's leveraging that large audience to help her build the brand. Megan also encouraged you to take full advantage of the free analytical tools that you can find on Wix and Twitter and Instagram when you set up a business account. Those free analytical tools can help you figure out when your followers or customers are online and when they're most likely to see and consume your content. It can also give you a good gauge on whether or not your campaigns are having the impact that you intended. If you missed Megan's story, please go back and check out Episode 5 on iTunes or Podomatic, or go to our website, Sierra.com, where you can stream it directly from the site. Go out to TooGoodCoco.com and get yourself some of this delicious cocoa. I've been drinking it. Love it. Also, make sure you check off your favorite charity and do some good when you buy some great cocoa. Now, in this episode, we're going to go back to the lab and start talking about ways that we can grow our business. And we've had some great mastermind interviews with three great companies, and we've talked to some great business owners. But in these mastermind interviews, we wanted to pick out those learnings that will help you build your business, to make you into a successful entrepreneur. Each of the companies that we looked at, G Mama's Cookies, Two Dough Girls, Too Good Coco, we're at different stages of growth in their business. And the key question I have for you, the audience, are these founders entrepreneurs? Now, founders wear a lot of different hats when they run their business. They can do everything from marketing to operations. But the question is, do they have time to plan the future of their business, the growth of their business, the explosive growth of their business? Now, before we jump into answering that question, and trying to solve the question of how do we get growth capacity, we must first discuss what's new in Gorillapreneur News. Gorillapreneur News, news about the sharing economy, the gig economy, and the circular loop economy that is expected to grow to $57 billion by 2025. We have a new sponsor for Gorillapreneur News, and that's Andrew Bouchard's new book, I Transform, You Transform, a self-improvement autobiography to help you. If you love personal development like I do, I'm always trying to get better, choose I Transform, You Transform, a self-improvement autobiography to help you. And it's available on Amazon, iTunes, and Audible. What's first in Gorillapreneur News? China's sharing economy is growing at 40% annually. Wow. According to China Daily and the China State Information Center, the Chinese sharing economy will maintain a high 40% annual growth rate through 2025. They also expect the sharing economy to account for 10% of the country's GDP by 2020. The growth in sharing economy comes from several different sectors, including products, services, and shared manufacturing, which makes a lot of sense. We talked in a couple of episodes earlier about one of the fast-growing sharing economy businesses, Mobike. Remember, Mobike is a fully stationless bicycle sharing service that uses a smart lock technology combined with a smart app. When you want to book a bike, you just go into the app, click reserve a bike, and it will show you where the closest one is to you. You use the app to unlock the smart lock technology on the bike, and you can even make the bike ring when you get close to it to make sure you're getting the right bike. Really innovative technology, simple to let you pick up a bike, drop up a bike anywhere in the country that they have these bikes available. So Mobike's one of these startups that has gotten some seed funding and it's growing like a weed. But what are some of the other Chinese startups that are pushing this 40%? Because some of them are just completely unique. For example, what if you wanted a part-time pet? Part-time pet? Yes, a part-time pet. For people in Beijing who are too busy to have a full-time pet, Mobark, not Mobike, Mobark, B-A-R-K with M-O in front of it. They have launched a business to let you share a pet. If you want a puppy, but you're not home enough to feed it, Mobark is going to solve that problem. This Beijing-based startup was launched to help solve some of the overcrowding problems at the pet sharing centers around Beijing. According to the founder, Li Tingting, Chinese pet shelters are overflowing with pets left behind by expats who no longer want older pets or can't afford to pay to transport the pet to their next job location. Tingting's service allows members to put down a deposit and have unlimited free pet rentals from a nearby pet center. That's a great idea and throws a lot of money back into the pet center so you can take care of these pets. What else is going on in China? Are you a great cook living in China? Would you like to share your dinner with a stranger? Well, the startup Home Cook in China has done just that. They've set up a platform, Home Cook, that allows individuals to be trained and certified and serve dinner right out of their homes to, you know, workers who want something other than food that they can find at your typical restaurant. Home Cook helps their host, or what they call cooks, share the dinner with buyers using the Home Cook app. Now, Home Cook recruits stay-at-home parents, retirees, and other cooks with spare times and kitchens to make meals. The former Alibaba area manager, Tang Wang Li, founded Home Cook in 2014 and now operates in six Chinese cities today. Hosts have to complete training and certification to prepare home-cooked meals to be able to be eaten on site or picked up or delivered. Now, Wang Li says, Home Cook receives about 50,000 orders per day with an average meal price of $7.76 per meal. Home Cook only earns about 1 yuan or 15 cents from every order. Home Cook has around 2 million, I said that right, 2 million registered users made up of primarily white-collar workers. According to Wang Li, cooks can earn as much as 4,000 yuans or $581 US per month. That's not bad for someone who's already at home, already preparing a meal. They're just preparing enough now for the orders that they're going to get from white-collar workers who want something a little different. Now, Wong Lee was inspired to start this business because he moved so far away from home, being in a city where he didn't know a lot of people. He thought this would be a great way to get a home-cooked meal and develop some relationships. Home Cook already has a valuation of $273 million. That's pretty good for 6 locations and having basically crowdsourced restaurant operations. Now, could this type of business work in the U.S.? Could we get around the commercial kitchen requirements the way he has in China? Now, he's struggling with that. He's kind of brushing up against some of those commercial kitchen requirements, and that may be tougher for someone in the U.S. to overcome that. But think about this. Uber, they operate in a lot of markets where they haven't been officially granted legal status to operate, but they pushed the bounds and created a multi-billion dollar enterprise. So Wong Lee is doing the exact same thing, building up demand and pushing to try to create some space for him to create value for both his hosts, which are his cooks, as well as the members who use the app. Could we do this? You got HelloFresh operating here in the U.S., and they allow you to choose any combination of meals from their menu on a weekly basis, and they deliver fresh ingredients ready to cook with a recipe to your front door. I wonder if these guys could reinvent their business model and crowdsource the preparation of meals in markets around the country to more effectively compete with restaurants. That'd be cool to see. I think I'd probably take advantage of that if someone cooked hamburgers or donuts. You know, I'm just saying. Now let's move back stateside, talk about some of the businesses that are driving the sharing economy in the U.S. My favorite company, Airbnb, they're back in the news again. And guess what they're doing? They want to become a full service shop. In the last podcast, I talked about sharing companies that are targeting high-end consumers. Invite Home and Third Home are targeting wealthy consumers and offering them everything from butlers and car services and personal shoppers, in addition to booking a vacation home when they travel. Airbnb wants to get in on some of that fat money cake, and they've launched an expansion of their services in Sydney, Australia as a test to see if they can connect travelers with local attractions in addition to booking their lodging. Their product chief, Josetta, stated, "People spend more on entertainment than they do on accommodations. And this looks like a real opportunity for Airbnb." Now, I agree. I'm an Airbnb host. In the last 2 years, being an Airbnb host, I've offered personal services, including catering and personal tours, to my guests. And Joe's right. I've earned more from the services that I offer through my Airbnb location than I have off the Airbnb home itself. But you already have travel services that are doing this on a nationwide or a global basis, like the packages that you can book when you go visit Disney World. I think the appeal of Airbnb is that it's an unbundled price that's a cheaper option than booking a hotel, which gives consumers the option to splurge on their entertainment. That perception changes when they bundle entertainment with the Airbnb price. And the bundled price is just as expensive as being at a hotel. I don't know if people will choose that. You just go back to the packages that you were getting to go to Disney World. It's going to be interesting to see how Airbnb rolls this out and how they make it unique and bring value to the consumers that already love their platform. Remember, we talked about their partnership with the Caribbean Travel Association just a couple of podcasts earlier. And that's, again, another attempt to try to locate Airbnb hosts closer to where the entertainment is so that you can have more of that one-stop shop, a bundled experience. In theory, I agree with Joe. There's value there. But how do you create that value proposition that keeps consumers engaged with Airbnb? You're going on your vacation. What if you want to take some really nice jewelry with you, but you can't afford it? There's a New York-based startup called Flaunt. Yes, like flaunt that thing, girl. And they've set up a sharing service that lets you rent jewelry. Yes, rent jewelry. Can you believe it? And you can get everything, high-end stuff, stuff from Tiffany and other designers of high-end jewelry for as little as $249 a month. Yes, the founder, Cormac Kenny, has launched this service, inspired primarily by his significant other's jewelry design business and trying to find a unique channel to display some of her work, has launched this great new sharing business called Flaunt. And members, as I mentioned earlier, pay $249 a month, and you can get as much as $60,000 worth of jewelry per year. And you get a piece, you can wear it. When you're done with it, send it back, get another piece. And you can get a new piece every month. Members can try new jewelry, and if they love it, guess what? They can buy it at a great discount from what they would get if they were shopping at their traditional brick and mortar outlets. Flaunt also licenses their platform directly to some of the jewelry designers, which is a great concept and a great way to leverage their platform. Now, I know some of you are thinking, wow, sharing jewelry, renting jewelry? Don't knock this concept before you look at the business model. Think about Netflix in the early days when they were mailing those DVDs to your house. Or think about GameStop, where you had to lease a game, play it for as long as you like, and send it back. Or if you really liked it, yeah, you bought it at a great discount to going to Best Buy or other traditional outlets to buy that game. And that's what these guys have done. Essentially, they've created a sales channel for people who love buying jewelry. Now, here's what I would have done had Flaunt been around before I got married. I would have rented my wife a ring just in case she said no or walked away. No, but you can rent a really nice ring for $249 a month and essentially get to a point where you can buy it at a deep discount. So give her some fabulous bling, let her flaunt, and pay it off at a deep discount that works with your budget. That concept might just work. And the fact that you can get that kind of high-end jewelry at that price may have some mass market appeal in the same way that Netflix and GameStop brought value to consumers. Pretty cool stuff. Now let's go back across the pond. Look at a concept in the UK who has tried to basically solve the overconsumption problem. People are buying too much stuff that they never use. And you're sitting here looking at me in my dungeon. You say, Mark, you got a lot of stuff around. Exactly. And they've looked at that and said, people buy a lot of gadgets, snowblowers, lawnmowers, TVs, cameras, and they only use them 10% of the time. So this new startup called Fat Llama, yes, like the animal, Llama, L-A-M-A, they just received $1 million in seed funding for their new startup, which enables members to share household items like a lawnmower or a camera with their neighbors. That's pretty cool stuff. Fat Llama's CEO and co-founder, Chaz Engelner, says that Fat Llama offers an alternative to overconsumption. Go in and list all your items. Say how much you want to rent it for and then put it out there on the platform. Let people go in and say, I want to rent your lawnmower for today or for the next couple of days. And they pay you through the platform and return the items when they're done. And here's the really neat thing. What if they don't bring it back? Fat Llama provides the insurance and covers your item. So they made it a low risk way for you to share those tools, to share that jack, to share that weed eater, and not worry about your neighbor not bringing it back. That's some pretty neat stuff. Now, I expect if these guys are successful in the UK and they roll this out, companies like eBay to take a good hard look at them because it's a great way for them to expand the scope of their business model, which lets you post to sell. This would give you the option to, say, let someone rent it out for a little bit, let the individual with the asset make some money, and then when they're done, maybe put it back up to rent or put it out there to be purchased. Pretty cool stuff. Fat Llama, look those guys up. Take a look at how easy it is to place anything out there. I even saw a kid put a tricycle up and let some other kids use the tricycle. So it can range from toys all the way up to tools that you can rent and try to help reduce the overconsumption problem. I love that. Love it. Now, finally, in Gorillapreneur news, traditional trucking. Yes, the 18-wheelers that blow past you on the interstate, they've entered the sharing economy. And they're tapping into ways for you to utilize the mobile apps to make sure that the truck is full 100% of the time. Miami-based Cargo 4 provides companies the options to ship locally for lower rates with trucks that have empty space in them, giving the trucking companies additional revenue and maximizing the truck's capacity. You got a truck that's picking up a load of hamburgers and delivering them to a restaurant. Once they drop them off, they have extra room in the truck before they go to the next restaurant or to the next facility. Well, Cargo 4 is trying to fill that empty space and get some extra revenue for the trucking company and potentially for the trucker. That's cool stuff. They already have 85 shipping companies and 380 carriers using the platform. Now, that's going to really make shipping more efficient and put downward pressure on shipping prices. Compare that to ZenFast that we talked about in a previous episode. ZenFast crowdsources their delivery service by tapping into anyone that has a car, truck, or van that's going from point A to point B, attempts to connect them with a package that's going in the same direction. That, again, is a great model, crowdsourcing delivery of packages, and now you have Cargo 4 kind of on the other end of the spectrum using a traditional shipper, 18-wheeler, that has some empty space and tapping into their model. That's pretty heady stuff too. I like both models. I can't wait to ZenFast stateside. Right now they're operating in Dublin, and see how that would work in the U.S. Given the fact that Uber's been a big success, I could see ZenFast doing well here, or at least getting a foothold here before Uber launches its own package delivery service. That's Gorillapreneur News. Guys, just take a listen to all of those concepts and see just how efficient the sharing economy is making our environment, using less resources, less energy, attacking overconsumption. That's everything that a Gorillapreneur is about. And of course, making a profit while doing it. That's cool stuff. Now it's time to streamline your business and get ready for that growth capacity. Who's ready to get in there and start fighting and making your business ready for high-end growth? Every startup wants to be the next Facebook. But most business owners don't realize that starting a business doesn't make you an entrepreneur. Well, you're like, Mark, what are you talking about? I'm taking a huge risk. I'm foregoing the riches of corporate America, and I'm putting it all on the line. And you're telling me I'm not an entrepreneur? Yeah. That's what I'm telling you. Why am I telling you that? Because I believe that you got to proceed through four stages, or most do, before you become an entrepreneur. And let's talk about those four stages. The first stage, frontline worker. Most of you who start a business, the first thing you are before you become an entrepreneur is a frontline worker. That's because what you've done when you started your business is basically created a job. You interact directly with the customers. You have a flat organization. One or two employees. You perform all the work within that startup. There's no time for you to plan the next 12 to 24 months. And guess what? The business cannot survive a week without the day-to-day work you perform. If that sounds like you, you're a frontline worker. You're not an entrepreneur yet. Now, you may grow past this stage if your business has a great product or technology or service to become a tactical manager. What is a tactical manager? You still have created a job for yourself because you're interacting with customers every day, but you supervise frontline workers who you've given the responsibility for handling all the administrative and clerical work. All the value add work is done by you or your co-founder. Now, you're responsible for setting objectives and executing tactics, but you still don't have the time to plan the next 12 to 24 months. And your business can't survive a month without the day-to-day work that you perform. You disappear for 2 months, you come back, and all your stuff is packed up and is on the street. So you still aren't an entrepreneur yet. The third level is executive manager. You still have created a job for yourself because as the executive manager, you're interacting with customers both indirectly and directly. Your employees now are performing all the administrative and do some of the value add functions, but they have no decision-making authority. You still have no time to plan the next 12 to 24 months of your business because you're wrapped up in what Stephen Covey calls the whirlwind, right? You've gotten a great business. You're probably generating somewhere above $1 million in revenue, but you're caught in the whirlwind. you're dealing with all of the big operations and administrative issues that can't let you lift your head up enough to look over the mountain and plan the next 12 to 24 months. And your business can't survive 3 months without you performing your day-to-day work. So you're an executive manager. You've zoomed out a little bit from the daily operations from the business, but you still don't have enough executive capacity to create explosive growth. The final stage is an entrepreneur. As an entrepreneur, you don't have a job and you don't need to take a salary. The employees understand the strategy of the business and they perform all the value-added functions. Administrative work, all the non-value-added functions, are outsourced to third-party providers, and you're most likely getting it by the transaction so that you can control your costs as a step function to your growth. Nearly 100% of your time is dedicated to developing and executing the business strategy. And guess what? Your business can survive more than a year without your day-to-day input. If that describes you, then you've reached the stage where you've become an entrepreneur. And I found that 20% of the startup founders reach that stage where they can call themselves an entrepreneur. If you haven't gotten there yet, you see kind of the progression from a frontline worker to a frontline manager to an executive manager. You see kind of where you are in that evolutionary cycle, and you want to work your way up to the point where you can spend the majority of your time looking at ways to create explosive growth for your business. Do you think entrepreneurs just luck into that entrepreneur title? No. The best founders know that to create growth capacity, they have to evolve into it by intentionally creating growth capacity, getting rid of the things that aren't value add by spending a little bit to create capacity to generate millions. In my book, Guerrillapreneur, I lay out a framework that helps founders learn how to create growth capacity. Don't sigh, you know I love 2x2 frameworks. So let's get started with creating that framework here for you on this podcast. Take out your pencils and papers because we're back in the lab now and we're going to do a little bit of work. Draw a square on that piece of paper. Now, draw a horizontal line from left to right on that square and from the center, and draw a vertical line from top to bottom. You should now have a square with four quadrants in it. Label your x-axis, the horizontal line, is the task critical to the daily delivery of your product or service. So label that horizontal line. Is the task critical to the daily delivery of your product or service? Now, on the y-axis, that vertical line, label that, does the task differentiate your business? Now, think about it. 2x2, your horizontal line is going to be labeled, is the task critical to the daily delivery? The daily delivery. And the vertical axis is going to be labeled, does it differentiate your business? So now we're trying to make each of the tasks that you perform fit into one of those four boxes. And you can see how this is going to help change the way you think about running your business. Now, in that upper right-hand box of your 2x2, so that's on that upper right-hand side, I want you to label that one core competency. That box where it's critical to the daily delivery of your business and it also differentiates you, that's the thing that's your core competency. That's a critical task. That's where you should be spending a lot of your time. And executive managers, that's where they spend a lot of their time, is on the critical task. Okay? Label the lower right-hand box partner source or lower cost. These are essential tasks. These are things that are critical to the daily delivery of your business, but they don't differentiate you. You got to have them, but they don't make you any better than your competitors. The upper left-hand box, label that invest. These are things that differentiate you, but they aren't critical to the daily delivery of your product or service yet. So you're going to put invest, write invest in that box. And in the lower left-hand box, I want you to write outsource. These are things that you do that don't differentiate you, and they aren't critical to the daily delivery of your product or service. So you're going to outsource those tasks. These are non-essential tasks that have to be done, But why are you staffing up with people to do them in your business, your day-to-day business, when they aren't differentiating you and they aren't critical to the daily delivery? Those are things you want to outsource to experts who can provide it to you on a transactional basis. So now you should have a 2x2 labeled X and Y axis and the four quadrants labeled appropriately: core competency, partner source or lower cost, invest, and outsource. If you got that all written down, you're ready to rock and roll and figure out how we can create some explosive growth capacity. Now, if you follow me on Twitter, you can find this framework pinned to my account. Go and check it out. Take a good look at it. Leave me some comments on the framework and leave me some comments about the show. Now, let's go through each of these quadrants and talk about them. And I'm going to give you some mini cases to show you how these quadrants helped founders create growth capacity. Let's start with core competency, those critical tasks. Those are tasks that are differentiating your business and that are critical to the daily delivery of your product or service. I'm going to use my last startup as the mini case in this quadrant. Our business, Pride Rock, provided fingerprint services for companies that needed to have background checks done with those fingerprints. If any of you have been fingerprinted, two ways to do it: on a paper card with some ink, which is the way most people kind of envision fingerprints being captured, and then with a technology called live scan. And when we got involved, the live scan devices were as big as your desk, huge devices that cost about $100,000. We didn't go into the business trying to be a manufacturer. We went in trying to be a software provider. We built software that connected to all the existing live scan devices that were in the market. So we didn't see our core competency as building a better piece of hardware. We saw ourselves as building better software that could capture the data that came out of those systems. So when we sat down to say, what are we good at? We said data management. And we wanted to be the best at controlling those devices and pulling out the data that they captured. And that included the biometric and any of the personal identifying information that goes along with that record before it's submitted to the FBI or Interpol. So when we settled on that being our core competency, all the other things that were around the fingerprint process became non-value add to our business. So that's where we focused, on trying to create a data management business. So what did we do with the rest of the stuff? To collect fingerprints, our competitors sometimes would take this expensive equipment and drive from location to location and fingerprint people. For example, teachers in Florida needed to be fingerprinted. So our competitors would drive up, go knock on the front door of the school and fingerprint all the teachers, go back to their office, plug in the equipment, and submit the prints to the FBI. We didn't want to do that. That wasn't our core competency. Our core competency was data management. So we built a network. We put these machines at UPS stores. We built a website and directed our customers to send their teachers to the UPS stores, where the UPS store owners captured the fingerprints and our system automatically submitted the prints to the FBI. All we did was manage the data and let the UPS store workers provide the expertise of customer service and fingerprint capture. And we just systematically eliminated all the other steps in the business and stayed keenly focused on developing a data management business. As that business grew, we added more ancillary services that had the same sort of workflow as managing fingerprints, like I-9 verifications or badge creation that could be layered right on top of the same workflow and helped us create an explosive growth business. We were approaching a $20 million run rate and we only had 18 employees in the business, but we had over 600 contractors collecting fingerprints for us by the transaction. So the same fee we paid to every vendor out there capturing fingerprints for us, whereas the data management piece was the explosive growth aspect of the business. Core competency. We stayed locked in on it and found ways to outsource, partner source, or eliminate non-value added transactions. And that opened up the world for us to innovate around the things that we were really good at. Now let's talk about partner sourcing. That box on the lower right-hand side. What does that mean? Partner source. Well, these are tasks that are critical to your business. You got to do them or you're going to go out of business, but they don't differentiate you. All your other competitors do them too. So you want to be really good at them, but you don't want to have to invest a lot of money to be great at it. You want your partner to have that as their core competency, and you want to get as close to your partner as you can get to create some value for your business that puts you a step ahead of your competitors. The best example of that is McDonald's. Yes, McDonald's. McDonald's has a Coke and a smile with every meal that they serve, but McDonald's doesn't manufacture their drinks. They do everything else. They have a huge business moving potatoes around the world, so for their French fries. So in theory, they could go out and build a factory and start making their own beverage, but they've decided that's not their core competence. Their core competence is in food management, delivering good food fast, not good drinks fast. So they had to figure out a way to partner source, to work with their partner, Coca-Cola, to create a high throughput drink or beverage management system that would complement their high throughput food business. And that's exactly what they did. As the business at McDonald's grew and the drive-thru's throughput increased, they had to figure out a way to keep up on the drink side. So the first major investment, and you probably guys all see this when you go through the drive-thru, is the drink carousel. That's when the cup automatically drops down from the chute into a carousel, which goes underneath the beverage canisters and are automatically filled right up to the appropriate level so that when the food comes up to the window, they grab it off the carousel, put a lid on it, and give it to you out the window. That carousel was not an invention of McDonald's, but an investment in that technology that helped them increase the throughput. They tied that to their point of service systems so that when they enter the order, it does it automatically, cutting down on the labor time and improving the throughput of the restaurant. That's a great way to think about partner sourcing. You couldn't get away with serving those chicken McNuggets without having something to wash it down. So therefore, you got to find a way to differentiate your business. And McDonald's said, we're going to make speed one way we differentiate the delivery of beverages. And that's going to give us a competitive advantage over, say, Wendy's or Burger King. And it has worked. These guys are the biggest and baddest fast food restaurants on the planet. And they still have a lot of growth in them as they look at China as the next big, great market. Partner sourcing. Take a good look at it. We did it with Pride Rock. I've done it with several other businesses where I've said, hey, I am not going to do this service because it's not my core competency, but I am going to go partner with a vendor to create something unique that my competitors don't have. Now let's look at the invest box. These are tasks that differentiate your business, but they're not critical to the daily delivery of what you do. They make you different. They make you better. But if you stop doing them, they don't necessarily stop the daily delivery of your product or service. Apple is a good example here. Many of you millennials may not remember the PDA, Palm Pilot. For those of us out there who remember those types of devices, Apple was the driving force behind those. They created what you call the Newton. And the Newton came with a little stylus, and they were able to write and do your calendar scheduling. Well, they jumped out ahead of everyone and created this groundbreaking technology during the time when most people were still engaged with their PCs. They were ahead of their time. Great technology that differentiated them from the market, but it did not drive the day-to-day operations of Apple. And so they did the appropriate thing. They licensed that technology out to players like Palm Pilot, who went out and created a great business for themselves. But Apple never forgot about that technology. Their strategy and their thinking was right, that eventually people would move to mobile, that people would want mobile computing more than they would want a PC or a laptop. They were just years ahead of their time. So when the time was right, Apple resurrected that technology and integrated it into what we know now to be iPods, iPhones, and launched a market that has essentially transformed Apple. Those who were in the late 80s and early 90s remember Apple as Apple Computer because that's what they were. As they have grown into more mobile computing, they've just now referred to themselves as Apple. As an entrepreneur, as Steve Jobs grew into becoming an entrepreneur, he stopped looking at the day-to-day and started looking out 12 to 24 months and putting all of his time into figuring out how do I disrupt the market. And disrupting the market is in that quadrant that says invest. You got technology there and you're an entrepreneur. That's where you spend your time. That's where Zuckerberg spends his time. He's spending his time saying, what do I integrate into Facebook to disrupt the market? He's not spending all of his time looking at the day-to-day. He's an entrepreneur. Now let's look at that last box, outsource. This is an important box too. Just because the task is going to be outsourced doesn't mean it's not important. And the way you outsource it and the way you think about it can be valuable to the growth of your business. And again, I'm going to go back to Apple because this is a great example of a company that utilized outsourcing to create a billion-dollar business that's now driving the growth of their company. When Apple launched the iPhone, it was a closed device. Steve Jobs looked at the iPhone again the same way he initially looked at the Mac computer, a great tool, a great product that was going to be completely controlled by Apple, the entire experience, soup to nuts, from manufacturing all the way through to the software that goes onto that platform. And for those of you who are students of history, you know that part of that thinking is what made Apple great, but it also is what created a flaw in their business model. Bill Gates was able to come along with Windows and create a whole clone army of computers that made Windows operating system the standard for the market. So Steve Jobs reversed course and decided to open up the iPhone and let the platform be available to third parties to build apps. That one shift was one of the greatest outsourcing decisions on the planet because it created an ecosystem of iTunes, App Store, that let Apple make billions off of other people's development efforts. Development was not a core competency for Apple. Opening up the App Store for people who wanted to specialize in creating great capabilities allowed them to create billions of dollars. Now, according to Money Magazine, Apple Services now accounts for $20 billion of the company's revenue in 2016, and is expected to grow at a double-digit rate out of the next 10 years. If all the work that you perform at your startup is important, then nothing is important. If you take that approach to your business, that everything is important, soon you will be overwhelmed with the whirlwind and won't get a chance to create the kind of explosive growth that we're talking about. Use the framework. Take those tasks that you perform, break them down, and prioritize them. They're either going to be core competency, where you're going to spend time refining that and building your capability. They're going to be partner source, those are areas where you're going to work closely with a partner to make your business great. They're going to be investments, things you're going to be thinking about over the next 12 to 24 months. And that's when you hit that box, is when you're really hitting your entrepreneurial stride. And then outsourcing, those things that don't differentiate you and that aren't connected to the daily delivery of your product or service, the stuff that you get paid for. When you start outsourcing those things, you're creating a lot more capacity for you to focus on the things that make you grow. You got to get rid of that frontline worker mentality. It's great to wear a lot of hats, but over time, you got to figure out how to specialize in the things that make your business great. Peter Thiel from PayPal stressed that one of the biggest things that helped that business grow was when he gave all of the workers a unique function that they could specialize in so that they could eliminate the things that didn't bring value to PayPal. And I think the same's true here is what I'm trying to emphasize with the simple framework. And I've used it in my businesses, and it has allowed, as I mentioned earlier, to outsource fingerprint collection when people didn't think that was possible. It allowed us to create a global network of partners that served our business and our customers with the same level of capability around the globe. It allowed us to outsource the collection of our payments to PayPal so that we didn't have to have a full-fledged accounting department. We kept pushing the boundaries until we had capacity to spend all of our time saying, how do we do more with the data that we're collecting out of these systems, out of these pieces of hardware that we did not manufacture? And just like in the example of Microsoft or Apple, our margins were much higher than the people who were building the hardware. Can your startup benefit from this model? Sure. Sure. If you're not an expert seller, why are you selling? Outsource it to an expert who can provide you a per transaction model and help drive growth for your business. If you're not an expert baker, but you're a terrific marketer, why are you trying to bake? Figure out how to partner source if that's critical to the daily delivery of your business, but you can't do it at a level that differentiates you, then you got to develop a partnership relationship that does differentiate that activity. Use this framework and let it create some explosive growth for you. Thank you for listening to the Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, you may also enjoy my book, Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategies for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths. Look for it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. Follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Guerrillapreneur. And please check us out at Sierra.com, where we have a lot of templates and startup documents for entrepreneurs, and you can sign up for our newsletter. And please, when you're checking out our podcast, hit the subscribe button on iTunes, and that way you can get the audio version of this podcast and listen to it over and over again. I also want to thank our sponsor, Andrew Bouchard, and his new book, I Transform, You Transform, a self-improvement autobiography to help you. Again, if you love personal development as much as I do, you need to check out I Transform, You Transform, a self-improvement autobiography. It's also available on Amazon, iTunes, and Audible. Now, I want to close with a quote from the great Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu. Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first and then seek to win. Keep fighting, guerrillapreneurs.